first reason is that the health dimension in the climate change negotiations is conspicuous by its absence, and yet it is one of the very few good news stories in town, if you like. It's good news because everything that we should be doing to mitigate climate change is good for health. And this point is one that is just not understood widely. So there's a real informing the public, informing health professionals, and indeed informing politicians job to be done here. The second reason is that much of the climate change debate was initially, 20 years ago, framed very much in environmental terms. And then it's moved increasingly to economic terms. But actually, economics is not the bottom line here. It's health, which is the point, not even the final point of convergence of all the disruptions and damages caused by climate change. So we've got together in the same way that physicians got together faced with the threat of nuclear war in the 1980s, and indeed were so effective within a short space of time that they actually got the Nobel Peace Prize. Faced with the reality of climate change, we feel that we really would be failing in our professional duty if we didn't step forward and show some leadership on all this.
Professor, give us an idea of the health problems that you believe climate change causes.
Most of the problems caused by climate change are through the indirect effect of huge effects on food security, water security, and population movement. There are a huge number of direct effects causing redistribution of disease patterns, for example, malaria, for example, tick-borne diseases, and, for example, of course, all the major events such as heat waves and cyclones. But it's these indirect effects making those already very vulnerable even more vulnerable, which are the most sinister.
Now, we hear much debate among the major powers, the U.S., China, India, all jockeying for position prior to the Copenhagen Climate Change Conference next month. You talk about the health problems that climate change causes. Do you believe that your organization can get past the economic aspects that you referred to earlier?
We believe so, because otherwise we wouldn't be about what we're about. And the reason is this, that if, for example, you look at just four domains, electricity generation, transport, agriculture, and domestic energy, in all of those, the very things that we know we need to do to mitigate climate change are going to produce huge health benefits, not just in high-income countries, but in low-income countries as well. And let me give you some examples. In the case of agriculture, there is now tremendous pressure, as well as very significant potential, to reduce CO2 emissions and greenhouse gas emissions associated with agriculture. But at the end of the day, one of the key devices at our disposal is actually to see whether we can't do something about the rising trend of meat consumption worldwide, which has gone up 5 times in the last 50 years, although the population's only gone up twice. And we know full well that reducing meat consumption actually is going to be extremely good for health, because cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death.
And some of the other reasons?
In the case, for example, of domestic energy, the provision of, say, 150 million clean cooking stoves in India will produce dramatic effects over the next 10 years on the amount of CO2 emission, as well as saving very, very many lives from respiratory disease and many other childhood illnesses as a direct result of people not living in a very polluted environment inside their own homes. In the case of transport, we know that if people actually get out of their car and start walking and bicycling, as they are doing in many, many cities throughout the world now, this will have a profound effect upon the very severe threats and damages caused by the obesity epidemic. So those are some pretty powerful examples. The point about them all is that actually these effects will be immediate and local. They won't be distant.
Professor, you say the Council has colleagues from around the world. Really, what kind of response have you received from health professionals on the various continents?
We've had a very, very good response indeed, and we've now got membership from literally all over the world. There are some continents where we wish we'd got more members, but in terms of the composition of the senior group, we've got some very enthusiastic, very senior, and very eminent, well-known people from all over the world. In addition to that, over the last few months, we've been running a pledge-based campaign inviting health professionals to say, we as individuals will do what we can to try and persuade our governments to sign a meaningful deal in Copenhagen. And we've got sign-ups from health professionals in 120 countries.